This is the Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. The Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County's On the Same Page program for 2015 is in full swing, running through the end of March. This year, it is focusing on not one but two titles, The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, and So We Read On, How the Great Gatsby Came to Be and Why It Endures by Maureen Corrigan. You may recognize Maureen's voice as the book critic for NPR's Fresh Air. She's also a critic in residence at Georgetown University and winner of an Edgar Award for Criticism. She's joining me from her home in Georgetown. Maureen Corrigan, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be here.
I was fascinated by your book, So We Read On. It really dug deep into Gatsby, much deeper than I had ever thought. And that's one of the points you make right in the beginning, that it's The Great Gatsby is a book we've all read, but we all read it too young. Explain why you say that.
Well, you know, of all of the nominees for great American novels that we have, Gatsby is the one that most people have read. And I take a poll every year of my freshman classes at Georgetown University, and I say, you know, what have you read? Did you read To Kill a Mockingbird? Did you read Moby Dick? A few hands go up for Moby Dick, few brave souls. You know, have you read Catcher in the Rye, Huckleberry Finn? When I get to Gatsby and I say, how many people have read The Great Gatsby in high school? Everybody's hand goes up. I mean, that's if we have an American novel that unites us, it's The Great Gatsby. But we do. We read it when we're 16, 17. And I think one thing that impresses me more and more about Gatsby as I get older, and I've read the novel something like 60-plus times, is that it's that voice of Nick Carraway's that draws us in, that voice of yearning for his dead friend Gatsby. Because remember, when Nick begins the novel, when he begins talking to us on page one, Gatsby has been dead already for 2 years. So it begins as a retrospective novel, and Nick is talking about his friend who he'll never see again. It's the voice of yearning, of regret, and that's a voice that I think we relate to more and more as we get older and we have more things to regret and to yearn about. When you're 16 and 17, I don't think that Nick's voice connects as profoundly as it does as we get older.
Well, you spend a lot of time with the Big Read program going around talking about Gatsby, and I love the quote that you offer in the introduction that you hear over and over again. It's a lot better than I remembered it.
People say that all the time, and even students at Georgetown who have read it then for a second time in my class, they tell me that. You know, I think when, again, in high school, not to bash high school teachers or high school courses on Gatsby, because the best letters that I've received about my book have been from high school teachers who, like me, have lived with Gatsby over and over again, almost all of their teaching lives. So I have terrific respect for high school teachers. But, you know, the students are focusing on The Green Light, The Eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg, you know, the big symbols in the book. And also, the movies have done a disservice by playing up the love story aspect of Gatsby, which certainly was the case with Baz Luhrmann's latest travesty of a movie of The Great Gatsby, the one that came out last year.
In 3D, yes. And
in 3D, I know, those shirts flying at us, you know, in glorious 3D. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but it's not Gatsby. You know, Gatsby certainly is about Gatsby's yearning for his lost love, Daisy. Everybody in the novel, by the way, is yearning for somebody or something that's out of reach. That's one of the patterns in the novel. But it's also, I think, our greatest American novel about class. And in fact, again, out of all of the nominees for the great American novel, Gatsby is the only one that foregrounds class instead of race as its big theme. And, of course, race is another hugely important theme in American culture and society. But Gatsby is all about the American dream and its deadly undertow. You know, Jay Gatz is a self-made man. It works, that idea of you can come from nowhere and become somebody. But then, of course, we have to think about how the novel ends. Gatsby is never allowed into the circle of the creme de la creme of East Egg society. He's always regarded as an outsider. And by the end of the novel, he's dead. So how real is the American dream? That was a question that Fitzgerald asked himself all his life, because he, too, was always on the outside looking in, as he said in a number of his letters. And even though he rose to the heights of literary fame in the early 20s, 1920s, by the 1930s, he really was Mr. Nobody from Nowhere once again.
Maureen Corrigan, the author of So We Read On, How the Great Gatsby Came to Be and Why It Endures. That title, along with The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, the two titles for this year's On the Same Page, Cincinnati. You can learn more about the books and On the Same Page at our website, wvxu.org. And I should mention that Maureen will be in town next weekend, Friday night at Joseph Beth Rookwood, at 7 o'clock for signing and talk, and then on Saturday at the main public library downtown in the Reading Garden Lounge at 2 o'clock to talk about So We Read On. You said people remember Gatsby as a love story, but of course, well, with recent movies, it's all about the party, and you point out in the book that every chapter of The Great Gatsby is really built around a party, so it's easy to see how people might mistake that.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I think it's certainly a contender for being one of our weirdest great American novels, too, in the sense that it's so over-designed. You know, there are over 400 time words in The Great Gatsby. It's a novel that's very conscious of a looming deadline, of the fact that its main character is going to be dead by the end of the story. It's a novel that's infested with symbols, color, of course, the green light, eyes, the eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberger, you know, eyes are all over this novel, including on the famous cover. And then this whole notion of the party scenes that organize every chapter. You know, when Fitzgerald went to Princeton, he got caught up in the drama societies at Princeton, and he was writing plays. And a lot of critics have said that you can see the bones of that dramatic apprenticeship that he did at Princeton in The Great Gatsby. It opens with a party, the dinner party at the Buchanan's house, where Nick meets his cousin Daisy once again after they've been separated for years. And it ends with a failed party, Gatsby's funeral in the rain, which very few people attend, and the minister who buries him doesn't even know who he is. That party, and of course I'm using the word loosely, is especially eerie because when Fitzgerald wrote that scene in 1924 or so, he didn't know it, but he was actually foretelling his own funeral in 1940, where he was buried in the rain by a minister who didn't know who he was.
Amazing to see that. I wanted to ask, well, we talked about the party and the love story, but you point out in your book, So We Read On, that Gatsby's really noir, that there's a lot of gloom in this. You already mentioned, you know, the book begins and we know that Gatsby is dead by the end. I never thought about it that way. It is very noir.
When the novel was published in 1925, and it didn't do that well, it fell below the expectations for sales that Scribner's had for it. Most of the reviewers of the day talked about it as a crime novel. And that was so illuminating for me to read those contemporary reviews from May, June of 1925, and to see these reviewers say, well, it's a gangster novel. You know, the main character is a bootlegger.
Mm-hmm.
His name, James Gatsby comes Jay Gatsby, right? The word gat is 1920s criminal slang for a pistol. So his very name, you know, it derives from the American underworld. There are three violent deaths in the novel. And right, it's retrospective. You know, we essentially have a voiceover with Nick Carraway going back and telling us the events of the summer of 1922. When Nick is supposedly speaking, it's 1924. So everything's retrospective. In 1949, there was a second Gatsby film made, starring Alan Ladd as Gatsby. And, you know, some of our listeners will know Alan Ladd was known in Hollywood for playing tough guys, as well as the cowboy role Shane. So that film is fascinating because it really is sort of a noir in the way it tells Gatsby's story. I say it was a second film because the first film of Gatsby that we get is 1926. It was a silent film, and all that remains of that film is the trailer, which looks fabulous, all these Busby Berkeley dancing girls jumping into a pool, but that film has been lost.
Well, and I love how throughout the book you describe the 1974 version of The Great Gatsby as static, and that's about what it was.
It's beautiful. You know, it's also funny, every Gatsby film, except that first one in 1926, imagines Daisy as blonde, and I think, you know, the directors, the producers, the screenwriters, who's ever responsible, they thought of Daisy as Zelda, and Zelda herself famously was this beautiful blonde. But in the novel, Daisy is described as dark-haired, and she's modeled partly after Ginevra King, who was Fitzgerald's first love. He met her when he was a sophomore at Princeton. She was 16. Her father was one of the richest men in the country. Ginevra invited Scott to visit her at her family's mansion in Chicago, which, when you look at pictures of it, it looks like a department store, the size of it. And the story goes that in Scott's hearing, Ginevra King's father said, "Poor boys shouldn't think of marrying rich girls." And that wounded him to the quick.
Wow.
So, you know, the other thing about Daisy in the novel that the movies tend not to pick up is that she's really not described as being incredibly beautiful, some amazing knockout. The thing about Daisy that draws men to her is her voice. Her voice is full of money. Baz Luhrmann left that line out of his version of The Great Gatsby, and I can't forgive him for that, because Daisy is a siren. She pulls men to their watery deaths, you know, by the allure of her voice, which is full of money. It's a high-class voice. When you think about Gatsby and the fact that Jay Gatsby is found dead in his swimming pool, well, I like to go to town with the water imagery in the novel and how drowning, you know, is so much the American nightmare, going under. Mm-hmm. And that was always Fitzgerald's nightmare, his nightmare of going under.
Amazing when you start to point out those water images, how prevalent they are in The Great Gatsby. And you
it's
mentioned
our dampest novel, I think, in the great American canon. It is just soaking wet.
Yes. Well, you talk about the characters being inspired by real-life people and how Tom Buchanan was based on a real person, Tommy Hitchcock Jr., who was a polo player and war hero. What about Gatsby? With a Cincinnati connection here, there was an article in the paper just recently that talked about George Remus, who was a bootlegger in Newport, Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati. And the article was suggesting that George Remus was inspired the character of Jay Gatsby. What, as a Gatsby teacher, do you know about that?
Very little. Very
okay.
little. He is one of several contenders. He's certainly not the only one. The one I know more about is a guy named Max Gerlich, Gerlich. And Zelda, late in life, after Scott had died, said that Max Gerlich was the inspiration for Gatsby. There's a letter from Max Gerlich, who was a bootlegger and a car dealer. So he hits a couple of the themes in the novel with his occupations. There's a letter from him to Scott Fitzgerald in the Princeton collection of Fitzgerald's papers. And it's a quick scrawled postcard more than a letter. And Gerlich is writing to Scott and says, How are you, old sport? So I tend to favor Max Gerlich as the bootlegger who inspired Gatsby because of the old sport line as well.
Maureen Corrigan, her book is So We Read On, How the Great Gatsby Came to Be and Why It Endures. She'll be in town next weekend, Friday, for Talk and Signing at Joseph Beth Booksellers at 7 o'clock in Rookwood. And then on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock in the main library, the Public Library of Cincinnati in Hamilton County, in the Reading Garden Lounge to talk about it. All part of the On the Same Page Cincinnati program for 2015. Maureen's book, along with The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, are what we're talking about. On the Same Page runs through the end of March, and you can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org, and also more about Maureen and her book. And Maureen, one thing we do on the book club at 91.7 is always ask, what are you reading? So, Maureen, what are you reading right now? Yeah, what are you reading?
I'm reading a terrific biography by Daisy Hay, who has written several biographies of British figures. And this is a biography of a marriage. It's called Mr. and Mrs. Disraeli, and it's about the Prime Minister, Benjamin Disraeli, a 19th century, also notable because he was a novelist and he was Jewish at a time when certainly that was not the greatest thing to be if you wanted access to power in high society. And his marriage to his wife, Mary Ann, who was 12 years older than he was, it was a love match, but it was also a kind of a house of cards relationship where they were both great political schemers and maneuverers. And I highly recommend it to anyone out there who loves Pride and Prejudice, who's kind of interested in the real context of 19th century marriages. It's fun to read, and it's really illuminating.
Well, Maureen Corrigan, thank you for being on the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
You've been listening to the Book Club at 91.7. Technical director is Bruce Ellis. Producer is Kevin Reynolds. Rick Andres is music director and segment engineer. Jim Nolan is web guru. Robin Carey Allgaier is the announcer. And I'm Mark Purcell. Next week on the Book Club at 91.7, with the Cincinnati International Wine Festival about town, a conversation with Melanie Wagner about her book, Hello Wine, The Most Essential Things You Need to Know About Wine. And along those same lines, Gentlemen Bootleggers by Bryce Bauer, which shares the story of a small town in Iowa that during Prohibition became the source for Templeton Rye and a rival to Al Capone. Those books and more on next Saturday's The Book Club at 91.7. Stay tuned for Weekend Edition next on 91.7 WVXU.